I'll give you one of my most fun facts. It was the very first fact that started the show, and I'll get you on the spot with it, because of course I'm up here in Canada, you're down there in Texas, so I will ask you and your listeners an interesting fact, and see if you can get it, which is, how many American states would you guess have landmass that lies north of Canada? And what that means is, of course, north of the southernmost point of Canada. And it's not a trick question. It's not like Canada owns an island off the coast of Fiji. It's not one of those. So the southernmost tip of Canada is the tip of Ontario, which is actually pretty close to where I am. So how many American states would you say have landmass that lies north of there, if you had to guess?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Set Lessing Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. Joining me today, we're kind of, sort of getting off the Springsteen train, though, as normal, he will come up. But I have a fellow podcaster joining me, and you guys know I love talking to fellow podcasters. Don Grant, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jesse. Oh, trust me, we're going to be talking about Springsteen for sure.
Yeah. So give us your elevator pitch. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I am based in Toronto, which means that, me in Toronto and you there in Texas, of course, we're both buried in snow. I have a podcast called Three Interesting Things, and it's a weekly podcast where we discuss the three most interesting things on the internet this week as submitted by listeners, at least in theory as submitted by listeners. Sometimes if I find interesting ones myself or some of the people that I talk to. So every week I have a guest on the show, and the two of us talk about the three most interesting things that we've encountered this week. Over the last month or two, it's kind of morphed a little bit into me talking with journalists about some of the stuff that they write about. So, for example, this week I spoke with a writer for BuzzFeed about stuff she's written about income inequality, especially, we had one section about the Texas storm. Last week, we talked about the Perseverance Mars lander with the space journalist from The Atlantic magazine. So, all kinds of neat, sort of interesting stuff. It's kind of laid back and breezy, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds a lot of fun. I've done a lot of podcasts over the years, and I was just talking to I do a Doctor Who podcast, and I do we kind of talk about Doctor Who episodes, and I do another podcast where we're currently covering WandaVision. And I was telling my partner that I'm drifting away from doing episodes about recapping, shows, and I'm more into the interviews. I love talking to Springsteen fans, and that will always be the bread and butter of the podcast. But I find myself branching out that if someone has an interesting article, or, we're both in part of podcast forums, and, people say, I'm looking for a guest, or I want to be a guest, and I'll go, hey, if you have any passion about music, join me and we'll talk. And so I'm glad you're here today.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's funny. It's interesting how things can kind of change a little bit when it comes to the podcasting world. I mean, when my show started up last year, it was mostly like each of the three interesting things were usually sort of three quirky, interesting facts that we discovered, or, interesting historical facts or scientific facts, or it's just sort of neat stuff that you would be like, hey, honey, I read this on the internet today and it's really cool. The only downside to that, I really like that is, for example, if I had you on the show, Jesse, and I said, okay, these are the three things we're talking about, you would then have to spend like a day or two kind of getting up to speed on the fact that, Henry VIII did this, or that Mars has this atmosphere, or whatever it is. Whereas when I'm speaking to somebody who's a journalist who's written about these things, it takes all that away. It's almost like I'm interviewing them about something they have talked about. I'll give you one of my most fun facts. It was the very first fact that started the show, and I'll get you on the spot with it, because of course I'm up here in Canada, you're down there in Texas, so I will ask you and your listeners an interesting fact, and see if you can get it, which is, how many American states would you guess, have landmass that lies north of Canada? And what that means is, of course, north of the southernmost point of Canada. And it's not a trick question. It's not like Canada owns an island off the coast of Fiji. It's not one of those. So the southernmost tip of Canada is the tip of Ontario, which is actually pretty close to where I am. So how many American states would you say have landmass that lies north of there, if you had to guess?
You would think a lot of New England would, because that's pretty high. And then also kind of on the western end. So I'm going to say 10.
You're going to say 10. That's actually higher than most people guess. When I ask, and by the way, Canadians get this wrong too.
Yeah, sure.
I'll ask Americans, I'll ask Canadians. Usually the average I'll get is somewhere between 3 and 8. And right. You said 10. And the correct answer is 27.
Wow.
Including California.
Wow.
And it's funny because like we all have that idea in our brains of, you know, the Mercator projection, the map is just sort of this as this flat thing. But if you look at it, if you pulled it up on Google Maps in front of you right now, you'd see a lot of Americans have the impression that Canada is this thing that sits on top of the United States like a hat.
Yes.
But in fact, they don't realize how far down it juts, to the point where actually of those 27, 11 of those states lie entirely north of Canada's southernmost border, including states like North Dakota and Montana and Wyoming. There's tons. It's crazy.
You know, I'm thinking of the West Wing episode.
Yes,
where they talk big blocks of cheese episodes where they talk about the world isn't how you look. And CJ's like, you're freaking me out, right?
Well, it's funny that you say that because we talked about that fact on the very first episode of Three Interesting Things. And I referred to that episode. And in fact, I pulled in a sound bite from that episode and dropped it into the show. So this is about 30, 40 seconds from that exact one that you referenced. It's funny that I love the fact that you knew it.
Yeah, there you can never go wrong quoting Aaron Sorkin.
No.
So yeah, that's nice. Well, Don, we always like to start at the beginning. So talk about growing up. Where did you grow up and what kind of music did your family listen to as you were growing up?
I had a pretty eclectic music background growing up. I grew up in Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada, until I was about 12. And then I moved to London, England, and lived there for a while and then came back here to Toronto. So it was kind of all over the place. And it was a mixture of, you know, my own 70s music as I was growing up. And, you know, my mom listened to a lot of show tunes. So I had a lot of Broadway show tunes as well. And then kind of formed my own musical taste going forward from there. But I became somewhat of a crazy, crazy music listener to the point where, as my wife will tell you, I really cannot do much functionally around the house if there is not music playing.
When did you graduate secondary school or high school, as they say here in the U.S.?
I graduated secondary school. And well, the funny thing is I lived in London and I went to an American school when I was in London. So most of my good friends from high school are actually Americans. And I graduated from there in 1984.
Okay.
So I'm an old man.
Jesse. Well, see, I graduated high school in 77.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah. So that's why when you were talking about top 40,
are both looking good, man. We're looking great.
Yeah, we are. Yes, we are. you know, you have that kind of the 70s and early 80s, that pop culture. And, you know, this is the old man syndrome, right? But one of the beauties was listening to either the AM radio or the FM radio, the eclectic music, right? Like and I'm just as bad as anyone else. Like when I have Sirius XM, I have it on the E Street radio, except when my wife's in the car, and then we will pick either 70s or, you know, the road trip channel or, you know, something we will pick. But the idea that, you know, you could have, there's a Grateful Dead channel, there's a Pearl Jam channel, there's a Tom Petty channel, there's a Billy Joel channel. I mean, that you can just go to your little niche if you want.
You can narrow cast as much as you want. So the E Street channel, is there like a particular artist who's played on that?
Yeah, really. That's it. Yeah.
That's entirely Hanson, I guess.
Yes. It was hilarious. I've had a series of episodes. I do another podcast called How Many, which is basically three or four of my buddies. And we pick a pop pop culture topic, and then we debate like how many good films have Ron Howard directed. And then we all make a guess, and then we discuss. And then, like, is this a good film or is it an odd good film? And for a change of pace, the local sports station used to do biggest band coming to town.
Oh, okay.
But then with COVID, they had to stop. So they started doing bands of your life. So they started having guest people, starting with other talk show hosts on their station. And then they have local sports celebrities and other things. And, you know, Joe Buck joined them and others, like Band You Hate, Band You Think That Is Overrated, Band That Made You Fall in Love with Music, Band You Could Listen to All the Time.
Right.
And my friends, my buddies were like, well, how are you not going to pick Bruce on every topic? And I was like, no, the rules are you can only pick one band, you know, for each question. So one of your fellow podcasters, the Skip and Josh podcast, they have a once a week show, and they just did for next week. They mentioned their topic is going to be your top seven song lyrics. And I tweeted Skip because he's a huge Springsteen fan. He joined me on the show. Right. And I said, my problem is going to be picking non-Springsteen lyrics. I can pick seven easily.
Well, I would think even if you decided to just choose Springsteen lyrics, you would still have a hell of a hard time narrowing that down.
Absolutely. It really would.
It's sort of like when people say to me, Hey, what are your, you know, top five albums or whatever? And I'm just like, just shoot me in the head. I, you know, because that's one of those questions where ask me today and it's probably going to be a different answer from if you ask me a month from now or 3 months ago. Right.
Yeah. I get that question a lot of casual fans. They're like, okay, well, what's your favorite Bruce Springsteen songs? And, you know, and I go, well, it just depends on the day, because it depends on the mood, right, and everything. So as you're getting into, you're going to an American high school based in London, I think, you know, like that sounds like the Werewolf, American Werewolf of London or something, right?
Yeah.
What kind of music did you start liking as a teenager? Did you start finding a specific genre or remained eclectic?
It was really, it's always been all over the place. Like, I think I've never gravitated towards like one specific genre or style of music. You know, like I listened to, you know, the classic stuff that everyone listened to in the late 70s, early 80s, right? I was listening to, you know, My Sharona. I was listening to, you know, in the 80s, I was listening to, you know, pop and rock. I never did metal. I was never much of a metalhead. I had nothing against it. It just didn't really speak to me in the sense that I like having something that I can listen to that I can probably sing along with because I can sing as well. That's the other thing I forgot to mention. I'm a voice actor as well. I do voiceovers for commercials and cartoons and that kind of thing in my everyday life. So I like having something that I can sort of sing along to and that's more melodic. And for the most part, metal doesn't really scratch that itch for me.
Yes, that's one of the reasons why I will, when they said band is a guilty pleasure, you know, I said, well, you know, I grew up in the 70s and I sang along with many of Barry Manilow 8-tracks.
Yeah. You know what? I don't think anything should really be a guilty pleasure. I've always said I don't think anybody should be embarrassed about anything they have on their iTunes playlist or whatever it is, or on the Spotify playlist, because if it is music and you enjoy it, then God love you, because good, you know, good for you. Like I am one of those people. It's funny. I sort of made a reference to Hanson 2 minutes ago. I will legitimately listen to Hanson. They are good pop writers. They write good pop albums. They're fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I have no problem with that. And if someone says, dude, you're a middle-aged man listening to Hanson, I'm like, yes, yes, I am.
Yeah, well, I had a guy on the show a couple of months ago that did a whole thing about Taylor Swift and Springsteen and connecting and everything. And it was talking about, it was a very interesting, and he said, yes, I'm a middle-aged man and I listen to Taylor Swift because of my daughters, but I'm proud to admit, I like the music. I liked Taylor Swift's albums and, you know, she spoke to me. So that's interesting.
That's the funny thing is that you do also, when you have kids, of course, I don't know if you have kids, but I have two daughters, And, you know, you start to also pick up some of their music as well. I'm fortunate in the sense that, like my eldest daughter, for example, seems to have taken some of my musical taste, which I will take some tremendous pride in. But also, of course, there's lots of music that they listen to where I'm like, I actually kind of like this. This is really good. So it's kind of neat to see that kind of symbiotic relationship of musically going back and forth between parents and kids in the house.
Chris is 31, so just turned 32. So we went through that space, and he was born in 89, so went through a lot of hip hop. He went through a Metallica phase where he loved Metallica. And I still joke with him. I go, "Next in line." That is not the lyrics, Dad. And then he loved Lil Wayne, and then when he went to school in East Texas, he discovered country music, and just really fell in love with a lot of country music. So he now has a diverse on his playlist. He will listen to hip hop, and he will flip over to country music and do everything like that. So that's kind of fun.
It's funny that it took him so long to get into country music. I would have think, you know, living in Texas, he would have been exposed to it a little bit sooner.
Well, and especially, I share my parents all homage to the Blues Brothers, right? But we listened to both kind of music as I was a kid, country and Western. I mean, Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, Hank Williams were big players in my house. Though my mom loved Fats Domino and Bobby Darin and a lot of 50s rock, so she loved that too.
A lot of people don't realize how big country music is in Canada. They don't think about that, but country music actually does very well in Canada. Most of the time outside of major urban centers, like it won't do as well in a city like Toronto where I live. But, you know, like if you're, you know, 3 hours north of Toronto, like where my mom lives, country music does very well there. Of course, if you're out west in Alberta or places like that, tons of country music. It does very, very well.
Were you did you get to see the PBS Kinsburns documentary?
On country
Country
music?
music, yes.
I didn't know we did one.
Yeah,
What
so you
is that a
should look for
recent one?
Yeah, just a couple of years ago, he did a part. I really recommend it. It he talked about it that historically when he does his documentaries like with the Civil War or jazz or the Roosevelts, he has historians.
Right.
And so as he started filming this, historians and musicians told the same stories.
Oh, that's neat.
So he ended up using a lot more musicians, he said, because what was interesting is Marty Stewart would be telling a story and he would pick up a guitar and start playing the song that he was talking about. So it goes all the way back to the roots of it, and how everything came from Jimmie Rodgers and the Carter family. I mean, those two people were the branches that lead to everything.
Oh,
So
wow.
it's a yeah, you should look for Ken Burns Country Music. It's absolutely worth watching.
Oh, I'll totally
Yeah,
look it up.
just even if you're not a fan of country music, just it's fascinating to hear all the things and stuff. So that's good. And some great, like I said, it's filled with musicians telling stories.
Right.
So that's good. So you talk about you have an eclectic playlist. So are there bands that tend to stay consistent on your rotation?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I also like, you know, there's never a bad time for Floyd. There's never a bad time for, you know, I sound so old. I'll say there's never a bad time for Van Morrison. But at the same time, you know, I've been listening to a lot of Ray LaMontagne lately. I love myself some Ray. I listen to a lot of blues. I listen to a lot of jazz, and it's funny. So on my Spotify playlist now, I have sort of one playlist, which is kind of like my main Spotify playlist, and it has about 1,500 songs on it. So it will go from it will go all over the map, and I continually add things to it all the time. And there's some Bruce on there for sure.
What's funny is, I don't remember what comedian, but I think it's so true. He said, on your iPod, which is now our phones, right? He says,
Right.
every song on your iPod was a song you picked, but then why so often do you hit skip when it comes up to it?
It's just sort of like, it's sort of like when you look at the Spotify, you know, selected for you, you know, or discovered for you thing. It's sort of like you look at it and you say, am I really that boring? Oh my God.
Yes.
who's the old boring man who did this? What, Jackson Brown? What the hell?
I know. So you mentioned that we wanted to talk about Bruce. So tell me, do you remember when you first discovered Bruce's music and your thoughts?
Well, let me ask you a question first, which is that you are quite obviously like a disciple of Bruce. No, yes. you are full on disciple of Bruce.
Yes.
He's number one above all else, which I think is great, which I think is really interesting. In some ways, I kind of wish I had an artist like that. I wish I did have an artist that I sort of could get down on my knees and pray to on a regular basis. And so I sort of do in a little way in the sense that I mentioned before that I also perform in musicals here and there. And so I love Stephen Sondheim, who's a musical composer who did things like Into the Woods and Sweeney Todd and that kind of a thing. But Bruce, I was one of those people in high school, I will admit. I was one of those people earlier on in high school who, if everybody liked an artist, I was that jerk who was like, I'm not going to like that person. And for no reason whatsoever. And of course, you know, when The River came out and when The River hit really big, you know, Bruce is starting to climb up the charts and everyone's talking about Bruce. And then I remember the first exposure I had was, I think, in Risky Business. Remember in Risky Business? Mm-hmm. When she goes over to Tom Cruise's house for the first time, they're playing Hungry Heart in the background.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, okay, it's all right. Oh, that's Bruce. Oh, that's that guy that everybody likes. Okay, I'm not going to like him.
Yes.
And then, of course, after that comes the, you know, the iconic early 80s where Born in the USA comes out and he becomes like, it's funny. I was on a podcast about a month ago talking about Bowie, talking about Ziggy Stardust. And one of the things we were talking about was there, like, how many people can you count, like in the last 50 years, how many people can you count who sort of transcended just being a musician and rose to the point of icon? And it's probably like, you can probably do it on one hand, maybe two, and the names that would come up would be, you know, Bowie, Bruce, Madonna, Michael Jackson, like the people who, even outside of the music they produced, became this kind of gravitational force in the culture. So as Born in the USA is sort of going crazy and crazy and crazy, I'm looking at it from afar, not with any kind of hatred, not with any kind of resentment, but just sort of like, oh, that's what those people like. Okay, yes. Interesting. Let me listen to Oingo Boingo instead, or whatever the hell I was listening to, right?
Yeah.
And then came Tunnel of Love. And that, you and I, as we were sort of talking to set up for this, we're talking about Tunnel of Love, because that was the one album, that was the first Bruce Springsteen album that I bought, the very first Springsteen CD that I bought, because I listened to it and I was like, this is different. This is something else. And I guess also because I was listening to the lyrics for the first time. And it was right, I mean, as you know, it was right after he got married. He wrote that album after he got married to Julianne Phillips. And I remember listening to that album, and I was listening to it with my girlfriend's brother at the time, who was a big Bruce head. And he turned to me as we were listening to it, and he said, they're going to get divorced. I was like, and I said, what are you talking about? He's like, listen to this album. They're going to get divorced. Because that album came out, I think it was like a year or two after they got married.
Right.
And the album came out, I think it was about a year before she filed for divorce. And he was 100% right. And, you know, it's a bit simplistic and reductive to say that it's an album about that. But at the same time, if you listen to it, it's, oh my goodness, it's there as clear as day.
So I remember a critic writing once that with Tunnel of Love, and it says it truly is the story of a marriage falling apart. Yeah. And I don't know if you've, you know, Bruce has been very vocal over the past few years. He did the autobiography, which is a fascinating book.
Right.
Then he did Broadway.
Yeah.
And then he did Western Stars.
Right.
Which is where he, an album that very Jimmy Webb, Glenn Campbell-ish kind of influences, and he recorded that album live in his barn, and between songs he talks about it and shares with himself. And he said there was a point in his life where if you loved him, he would try to hurt you and get you away from his life before you could hurt him.
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know, he talked about fighting depression. So yeah, I think your friend was spot on. It is one of my favorite albums of his. I think there is a lot of beauty in it, and a lot of, one of my highlights, he was in Houston back in 2014 and someone had a sign request, do One Step Up. And, right. You know, and he did it. And he says, you know, we do not know this song, and, you know, and the band and him, you know, walked through it. And it was just this great version of doing that. So, yeah, I love it.
I mean, the other funny thing about that album, when you think about it in sort of in retrospect, when you look back at it, is, you know, he's coming out of Born in the USA, which sells like, you know, 12 million copies. He's like arena rock god of the planet for the entire decade, et cetera. What do you do after that? Do you know what I mean? Like after he did The River, you know, he went really stark. He went homemade and he did Nebraska. So he couldn't exactly do the same thing. He can't suddenly make this dark, stark album again, because that would seem a little too formulaic. So out comes Tunnel of Love, which is kind of, I guess, a little bit in between, right? In the yes. sense that it's not that big arena rock that you will have from Born in the USA, but it's not as stark as Nebraska. It's not as sort of quiet as Ghost of Tom Joad, which was to come later on. But at the same time is more personal, and it's telling this personal story about him. It's not just this sort of like, oh, you know, Jenny did this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's you can tell that these are things that he is talking about himself.
Yeah. And there are critics and biographers that will argue that Bruce deliberately tried to bring down the Born in the USA hype, right? Like to almost bring back his fame by doing Tunnel of Love. And then, you know, he fires the band and he goes off to California and, you know, marries Patty and has kids and does, you know, the two albums released at the same time and tours with the other band.
Right.
And it was almost like I've got to pop this balloon myself before someone else pops it.
I find it interesting that on Tunnel of Love, it's not counted as an E Street Band album, even though most of them played on it, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had the guys on that I was telling you beforehand, the three friends. We're recording this on March 2nd, and March is Springsteen Friendship Month on the podcast. I have eight episodes, two a week, that were people specifically bonded over Bruce's music.
Oh, that's
and
neat.
So we're doing that. That's a theme for this month. And the three guys they had met at a book signing, but they have an ongoing argument that is Wrecking Ball an E Street album? And one of them says, no, it's just a Bruce solo album that he happens to have some of the E Street members play on. And the others like bring out this, you know, the song list and go, look how many E Street members play. You know, it is an E Street Band album. So it's very funny.
Well, I will say that this is also one of those albums that I kind of go back to again and again. And this is the point. In fact, one might say this is almost the point where I kind of got over that that teenage thing of, oh, everybody likes them. I hate them. I did the same thing with U2. You know, when U2 was huge in the 80s, I was just like, fine, I'm not going to like U2. And then got into them a little bit later. I was kind of like behind the curve on everything. But this particular album still to this day in 2021 is on regular. There's like about five tracks on this that are regular, that are on that master playlist that I have on Spotify.
Yeah, and I do think there's a lot of beauty to it. And there are songs that I would love. You know, I get asked often, what's your favorite Bruce album? And that's just impossible to pick, right?
Why would you bother? Right?
Yeah, but I will mention that Tunnel of Love is in the discussion.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Like and we had during the Working on the Dream tour, he did some album shows where he played the whole album. And I would love to hear Tunnel of Love, you know, full. I would like to hear the band do that. That would be cool.
The funny thing is, like, when I look back on this album, there's so many interesting aspects to it. First of all, like, it starts out so up, right? It starts out with Ain't Got You, which is this really, this almost Bo Diddley sounding track. And it's just so funky. It's like, oh, this is a lot of fun. And then, you know, Tougher Than the Rest and All That Heaven Will Allow, they're both sort of like, hey, I met a girl, I fell in love, everything's great. And then after that, everything turns to crap. Like, Spare Parts hits, and even though it's like, call me crazy, but you could almost look at this album like a concept album. No, I mean, it's pretty close to a concept album. I mean, it has, a few things outside. It doesn't tell the same story. Spare Parts is a bit of a, you know, anomaly in terms of the story. Cautious Man is a bit of an anomaly. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you look at sort of the themes that are being discussed, especially in the second half of the album, it's talking about, stuff gets hard, man. Like, you're going to meet a girl, you're going to fall in love. And what's the lyric? This at the end of Tunnel of Love, he sums it up. Hold on, I gotta pull it up. At the end of Tunnel of Love, and I think about this lyric all the time, he sums up essentially what all relationships and most marriages are, which is, he says, it ought to be easy, ought to be simple enough. Man meets woman and they fall in love, but the house is haunted and the ride gets rough. You gotta learn to live with what you can't rise above. And it's like, that sums up the nature of relationships pretty much universally, right? Because it's not completely blastingly negative.
No.
But at the same time, it acknowledges the fact that any relationship, even the best relationship, is a matter of constantly working at it, right? Yeah. And of course, you know, we know how that one came out for him, but it's fascinating to see how well he was able to kind of break it down as he was in the middle of it, because he wrote this album when they were married.
Yeah, and what's interesting, right, is the when I bought his autobiography, I had two things I wanted to know. I wanted him to cover the divorce, because he talks very little about it, and the disbanding the E Street Band. Those are the two things I was most interested in. And he covered both of them very well in the autobiography. And he very makes it clear that he feels like the failure of the marriage was all him. That, you know, he said that at one point he was sitting in a restaurant looking at Julianne going, oh my God, this is this beautiful woman, you know, this model, this amazing. And how quickly is she going to find out that I'm not who she thinks I am? She's going to figure out that this, I'm fake, and that I am not someone that's worthy of her love.
It's almost like he was wearing a brilliant disguise.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, you talked on, and I always like to bring this up. I had never thought about this, but there was another podcast and she had had a guest on. And of course I'm drawing a brain fart, as you do sometimes.
Okay, you can edit this part out of the show.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the best part.
Yeah. Where he was fighting cancer.
Right.
And he said that All That Heaven Will Allow, he played over and over again because of the last verse. It says, now some may want to die young, man, young and gloriously. Get it straight now, mister. Hey, buddy, that ain't me. Because I got something on my mind. It sets me straight and walking proud. And I want all the time, all that heaven will allow. And three or four years ago, I had colon cancer. And I'm fine now. Everything's good. But that was one of the songs that I thought about, that, you know, and Bruce, I'm sure, had no thought about this being, you know, I want all the time heaven will allow for that kind of thought. But it works so beautifully in that.
That's the funny thing, right, is that once an artist creates something, they kind of lose the control over what it is to other people.
Yes.
Right. I mean, like, you know, you can, as much as we would like to say, you know, a filmmaker or a songwriter can say, no, 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 that's not what I meant. And we on the other side of that equation can say, fine, I get that that's not what you meant. And I get that you didn't write All That Heaven Will Allow about somebody with cancer. But guess what? That song helps somebody who was in that situation. So you're almost no longer a part of that equation. You've gone. You've done your work.
Yeah, toward the end of the episode, I will ask you the Mary question, and I had kind of prefaced you for that. But people have often asked, like, hey, if you had Bruce on the show, you'd have to quit asking the question, because Bruce would give you the definitive answer. And I, one of my early teenage heroes was Isaac Asimov. I adored his collection of short stories, his novels. He was just someone I adored. I read all his books, and he had an autobiography where he talked once. He was doing a lecture, and he made a point of what a short story was about, and someone raised their hand and said, Dr. Asimov, that's not what the story's about. And he said, well, I wrote the story. Don't you think I know what it's about? And the guy said, just because you wrote it, what makes you think you understand what it's about? And in the autobiography, Isaac says, I think you're right. And he said, I never again made the decision. I knew what I meant it to be, but I never again made the decision that that's what it was about, because it was up to the reader.
Right,
and I think same thing for music, right? That's what it, because you send something creative out there. And, you know, I really had a nice, an interview a few months ago. I hit my 5-year anniversary, and, Backstreets did an article on me, and Ken said that the podcast was all about connections. Right. And I'm like, really? I just thought it was me talking to other Springsteen nerds. It was just me talking to other music nerds.
Yeah, but you never know.
Exactly. Absolutely. So have you been able to see Bruce perform live?
I have never seen Bruce perform live. I know. I feel like, yeah, I've been cheated out of one of life's great mysteries, because I know that he brings it. There was, he's come here a couple of times. He's played here a number of times. And I think it might have even been the Tunnel of Love tour that I might have had a chance to go to that I didn't go to, because I was probably into a girl at the time, and it was one of those ridiculous, stupid excuses. But I wasn't into him enough to go to one of his concerts like that. Yeah. Like, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, if I was spending whatever it was at the time, like 50, 60 bucks on a concert, it was like, this has to be someone I want to see. I paid to see Peter Gabriel in concert. I paid to see Floyd in concert. I paid to see, you know, Lyle Lovett in concert 4 times, because I love Lyle.
Oh yeah, nothing wrong with Lyle.
Nothing wrong with Lyle, baby. I love
Lyle. So have you watched the Broadway play on Netflix?
I have not watched it yet. I've seen clips of it, because different people have shared different aspects of it on social media, so I've seen different things. And I remember when I first heard that he was doing Broadway, I thought, that doesn't seem like a fit that I think would work, but apparently it did. And so what the hell do I know?
Well, I don't know if you know, he's currently doing a podcast with some guy named Barack Obama.
I heard that. Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Funny, the two of them. It's funny what Spotify money will do for you.
Yes. And they were telling the story that at the end of the Obama administration, he had reached out to Bruce and said, I want to do something for my staff that had been here the whole time. Would you mind performing? And Bruce said, yeah, I'll be glad to do. He said, I'm not going to bring the whole band. That would just be kind of, you know, that's strange, but I'll bring a guitar and I'll sing a few songs. And he said he was talking to Patty, and, you know, Patty said, well, you could read from the book. And Bruce said he tried to read from the book, but that seemed stiff. So he ended up paraphrasing the stories. And so he ended up doing, like, you know, a 60, 75 minute show there at the White House, and for AIDS, it basically him telling stories and singing songs. And and afterwards, and, you know, President Obama is telling the story in the podcast. He says, you should do that. You should do this show somewhere else. And he said that was what led him to going to Broadway.
Well,
is the idea to do that. Yeah. And so he did it. It is my wife could not make it through. She, what's funny is, the very first part of the show, talking about his father and his relationship with his father in the town, is very depressing. And my wife said, this is just too dark. This is depressing. I got to go, Jesse. And what's funny is, like, 5 minutes later, Bruce sits at the piano and says, okay, I'm going to get you off suicide watch. Let's talk about my mom. So
it's funny you say that, actually, because on Tunnel of Love, the one song about his dad, Walk Like a Man, that's one of the songs that I skipped through. I like, it's fine, but it's not one of my favorite. It's my least favorite song on the album. It's funny you say that about Bruce, by the way, doing that at the end of the Obama administration, coming in sort of like, I'm done here and I want to sort of do something nice on my way out, because that's exactly the same thing that happened to him with Letterman, right? When Letterman left late night, he was like, who's the one guest I haven't been able to get? And the last guest, of course, was Bruce. So that seems to be Bruce's gig, is like, someone's on their way out of their thing.
Okay, let me do the thing. Yeah. good. I would love, Don, for you to watch it and then join me again and talk about it.
Absolutely.
I think that would be a great episode. I think that would be really fun. So how do you, let's talk about three interesting things. That's the podcast, I assume, available everywhere podcasts are there, right?
Everywhere fine podcasts are sold, yeah.
Yes. I did make, Stephen Colbert made the joke that now then that Bruce has a podcast, he did a parody, Colbert did, of I'm on Fire, basically saying I'm going to the post office using postoffice.com, stamps.com, stamps.com. He said, it's a podcast, you have to do a stamps.com.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Or Harry's Razors.
Yes, exactly. So what gave you the idea that you wanted to start this, and why the three interesting things?
It came from a couple of things. It's funny, starting it was sort of like, I think it was either a friend of mine or something I saw on Twitter that said, women go to a therapist, men start a podcast. And so that kind of, to me, was I guess a little bit of that. You know, it was the middle of the pandemic last year, and I had a podcast before about 8 or 9 years ago, which did pretty well. And but I did that with a friend of mine, and he did most of kind of the heavy grunt work and lifting in terms of editing and all that kind of a thing. And now that I have this, you know, this home studio set up in my house, I thought, you know, with all this pandemic time on my hands, I'd like to do something. And it kind of was born out of an idea that I got from all places, another podcast. I don't know if you know the Slate Political Gabfest. It's one of my favorite podcasts. It's okay. Three very smart Slate journalists, including John Dickerson, who I believe is pretty well the best political journalist the United States has to offer, and I wish there were more like him. And at the end of their show, they have this thing called Cocktail Chatter, where they just talk about three things that they sort of, each of them sort of encountered over the week. And they also invite listeners to sort of submit theirs. And I remember I was driving home from work one day, and one of the hosts, David Plott, said, boy, we could do an entire podcast just with listener chatter. And I thought, actually, yes, you could. Yes, you could. And that was a little bit of a light bulb moment. And so I thought, why don't I, you know, take that and try to run with it. So, you know, it's still sort of a little bit nebulous in terms of the form it's taking, but we're still, you know, it's three things every week, three different topics, you know, but 8 or 9 minute discussion about each of them. So the idea is that I kind of try to walk the line between two know-it-alls talking about a whole bunch of crap that you don't know, saying we know it and you don't, or just two people who don't know anything. It's kind of like a little bit in between. So the idea is, after you listen to it, it's almost like you know a few things you didn't know before, but it didn't sound like it was, you know, being lectured to you from a book. So.
How do you find your guests?
Through a variety of places. It started out with me talking to a lot of fellow podcasters, but as I mentioned off the top of the show, one thing that I've been doing a little bit more lately is, as I've been reading, you know, I do a lot of reading of online magazines. I'm a big consumer of news and culture and various other things. If I read something that's interesting, now what I'll do is I'll frequently reach out to the author and see if they want to come on the show. And amazingly enough, a few of them, you know, say yes. And so, I have two that I've recorded that, you know, already in the can, which are ready to come out in a couple of weeks. I've had journalists from, you know, the New Yorker, the Atlantic, BuzzFeed, independent journalists, all kinds. I've had authors. I had Sam Keen, who's a science author, all kinds of really neat, interesting things, so that the topics can range all over the damn place. So, which is kind of nice, because then if you're someone who likes something a bit more sciencey, you know, we'll talk about Mars one week. And if you like something a bit more about politics and economics, then this week's show would be one for you. Or if you like one more about food, then the one that's coming out next week might be for you. And the best part is, you know, it's, if you don't like the podcast, guess what? There's a lot of podcasts out there.
Yes,
I don't
there
care.
Are.
Yeah. If you don't want to listen to mine, that's cool. Guess what? There's a bunch of other ones out there, and God love you. Go find one.
Do you try to kind of mix, it sounds like you try to mix up the topics where you don't stay overly political, you don't stay overly scientific, you kind of try to mix up some, you know, like, well, this sounds, would be an interesting discussion, this is kind of a funny fact. Is that kind of your thought as you're building this?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, as I build every episode, and it is interesting because now, of course, that I'm doing a bit more of like interviewing these journalists as opposed to sort of the, you know, the weird facts, they're a bit more thematically linked, you know.
Yeah.
So this one, that the woman that I spoke to this week, is thematically linked about, you know, economic inequality. You know, last week's was about the Mars rover, but we also talked about Space Force, and we talked about what makes an astronaut. You know, and then I've talked, and then, you know, other episodes will be like, you know, I talked about Betty White being an early civil rights leader, talked about the James Bond film that wasn't a James Bond film, about being able to clone a woolly mammoths, all kinds of stuff like that. So we do try to mix it up, for sure.
Do you keep a running tab of, hey, this is, would be a good topic to talk, or?
Oh, Jesse, I have tabs open on my browser like you would not believe. More tabs than you would find at Altamont. It's crazy.
Yes.
So if there's something that I find, I'll bookmark it and then see if it'll be a good topic. And then, you know, when you interview people, as you know from doing this show, it's always interesting to see whether or not, you know, you have chemistry with the person, number one, whether or not the person's going to bring it. You know, you can find someone who has a lot of interesting things to say but is not terribly great on the mic, or vice versa, right? So, you know, it's hit or miss, but hey, it's podcasting. So, you know, you're going to have some winners and you're going to have some not so winners.
So one of the reasons I asked the question, what have I not asked you that I should have, is because I had someone several years ago was on, and, you know, it was like a 45, 50 minute talk. It's good. And, you know, but he seemed to be out of stories. And so, you know, we closed it and I thought it and I turned off the recorder. And I said, I hope you had fun. He goes, oh, I had a great time. He said, next time I should tell you about the time I got drunk with the E Street Band.
And you're like, click, hold on, click, click, yes. record.
I love that. It is, I told my wife that the other day. I've been lucky. Usually I seem to find people who are good conversationists. One of the worst parts of an interview is, you know, one word answers.
Like, right. Yeah, yeah.
So having
to throw to somebody like too many times, right? It's like,
yes.
Oh, I got to keep throwing to you. You're not giving me much. And
yes.
Like, and then the other problem with that, as I'm sure you've stumbled upon, is that you don't want your show to sound like you talking for 80% of the time to the other person. And then everyone's listening, sort of saying, geez, Jesse's yammering on today, dude. What the hell? And it's like, and you want to say, no, it's not because I wanted to. This is that this Don guy was a total stiff.
So I did have one that shall remain nameless that I asked him a question, and like almost 12 minutes later, he was still rolling.
Oh, wow.
And I interrupted and to try to reset, you know, kind of radio, hey, we're talking to blank about blank. And he said, why are you interrupting me? I'm getting to that. I'm like, well, I'm just resetting. You don't need to reset.
So, but hey, you have the best part because you have the editing power at
yes,
the end of the
exactly.
day, right? So
yes.
A lot of that stuff is going to wind up on the cutting room floor.
Absolutely. Any future plans for the podcast? Is there anything you haven't done yet that you want to do, or you just want to keep on going with what you got?
I'm in the midst of, like, when I first started out, I was thinking about having a permanent co-host, and then I thought that would be a bad idea because I wanted to kind of bring all these new people in because, you know, as you've discovered through this show, Talking to new people is, you know, it's interesting. It's fun. Yeah. You know, here I am. I'm talking to a man from Texas I've never met before and having a nice conversation. So, you know, it's funny because I'm also a photographer in my real life as well. And it's a social skill, right? And being behind the mic and being behind the camera are similar in a lot of ways in that you are trying to bring out something in the other person and you are talking to the person, you're interacting with the person. And, you know, that's kind of the gig.
Yeah, and it's interesting to kind of make sure that you want the flow, you want the conversation to be entertaining. You know, it's funny. I sent out to, you know, kind of some of my core audience members, and I said, hey, don't be polite. Tell me what I can do better.
Yeah, right?
Like, you know, I want to know. And so it was funny. One of them sent, well, you know, Jesse, I think sometimes you try to keep it about an hour, and I think that's best. He says, and then I listened to your podcast today, and it was an hour and 25 minutes. And I went, don't change a thing. I would not have edited anything out. Just keep doing what you're doing, Jesse. So,
yeah, I mean, I aim for half an hour for mine. But, you know, the last two episodes have been about 40 minutes. So yeah. That's my version of that. It's like an extra 10 minutes. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't want to cut anything out of this.
Exactly. No, it's good. Well, this has been great. I forgot that you were from Canada, or else I would not have. I have booked another podcast after you, because I was going to warn you. Every time I talk to a podcaster from Canada, we go long. So I'm going to have you on again. I want to talk about more stuff. I want to talk more about your show.
I tell you what, I will watch the Broadway.
Okay, and then we'll go.
And we will reconvene, and I can give you my
thoughts. Sounds great. But I can't let you go without answering the Mary question.
Okay, so what's the question?
So Mary question is, Jay Armstrong is an honors English teacher in the Philadelphia area. He just recently retired. And he would take the lyrics to Thunder Road and break them down, look at the imagery and all the lyrics. And then at the end of the 2 days, he would ask his seniors, does Mary get in the car? So that's your question, Don. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
Yes. I'm going to guess yes. I'm going to say she gets in.
Okay.
Hey, yeah, it's a town full of losers, right?
Right. So your thought is, yes, she's going to take that leap and go off and head off with him.
Yeah, I think so. It's funny that you say that, because now that I'm looking at that, there's a lot of similarities between Thunder Road and my favorite song, my favorite Bruce Springsteen song. Asking you your favorite Bruce Springsteen song is obviously an impossible question.
Yeah.
If you ask me mine, it's easy. It's from Tunnel of Love. What would you guess it to be? If you had one guess, what would you guess it to be?
So I want to say Tougher Than the Rest, but I'm going to... Brilliant Disguise?
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day is beautiful.
The last song on the album is an absolutely glorious, quiet, and it's the perfect headphone song. And it's funny because if you think about the end of that song, it's also a little bit kind of, you know, here he is driving on the road.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he's going to be finding his loved one, you know, so hold me close, say you'll be forever mine.
Yeah.
You'll be my lonely Valentine. And you don't know whether or not, you know, it's like here you are at the end of this sort of brutal album of, oh, everything's crappy. And maybe there's a little bit of hope. Maybe Mary gets in the car. You know, it's a little bit of the same kind of vibe.
I love that you connected Valentine's Day and Thunder Road.
Yeah.
I love that. Don, if someone wants to reach you, how can they?
I can be found on Twitter at 3Interesting. That's the number 3Interesting. I am on Instagram at 3Interesting Things. That's the number 3Interesting Things. Or email at 3interestingthings@gmail.com.
All right.
You can find me on all your podcast apps.
When do your episodes come out?
We come out every Tuesday. I usually schedule them for 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, so you can wake up and have it ready to go on your phone. So Tuesday morning, you'll find new episodes of the show.
Well, Don, we will have you back. I enjoyed visiting with you. The time went way too quick.
Hey, Canadians, man, that's the way it works.
I hope you and your family are staying safe during all this crazy pandemics.
We are staying safe. You know why, Jesse? Because we're wearing a mask.
Well, I just was going to end. Listeners, please remember to social distance. Remember to wash your hands. Do not be like the Texas governor. Wear an effing mask.
Yeah.
And let's all be good to each other, because that's the only way we're going to get through this. But for
Amen,
now,
brother. Amen.
Thank you. Goodbye. Doing a podcast at times can be a one-way conversation, and I hate that. So please let me know what you like and don't like about the work I'm doing. You can reach the podcast via email at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. The show is on Twitter at setlustingbruce, and my personal Twitter is at jessejacksondfw. We have a website, www.setlustingbruce.com. From there, you can find links to other Springsteen podcasts, as well as other music-themed podcasts. We have a page devoted to our own SLB All-Star Band. These are guests who have been on the podcast more than 3 times. There is a link to our store where you can purchase Setlusting Bruce shirts, as well as a Mary Question t-shirt. There is a link to our Patreon page where you can sign up to help support the podcast financially. We have different levels and different rewards based on your support. If you don't have any extra cash, and right now who does, you can support the podcast by subscribing via your favorite podcast player and leaving us a review. The more reviews we have, the easier it is for people to find us. And please tell a friend about the podcast, especially if they love Bruce or music, because it will make a difference.
You just heard the fun talking, hard rocking, music loving, album ranking, fan thinking, joy spreading, lyric reading, story sharing podcast that is the one, the only, Setlusting Bruce. Setlusting Bruce is part of the Southgate Media Podcast Group. The theme for Setlusting Bruce was written by David Rosen, used by permission.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.